We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, FM 90.9, HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. So glad you could join us this afternoon. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. And I look forward to your questions for Susan. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call us toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She works with clients of all ages and athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also a consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the ARC. That's the Division of Campus Recreation Activities and Recreation Center on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. A member of the American Dietetic Association and the American College of Sports Medicine, she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. On the web, www.nutritiononthemove.net. Again, questions about diet and nutrition are invited. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
And we have some exciting news. You're making your first screen appearance on UI7, which is cable for the University of Illinois community on campus. But because of the web, people all over will be able to see you.
That's right.
And the first one is up, and I watched it this morning. It's terrific. It's
well,
a program called I Cook.
Right. It's called I Cook for Illinois, and it's a program that we're going to try to run monthly, which would have quick, easy recipes. I always tell people I'm a dietitian, not a chef, but I do love being able to help people eat healthy. And a lot of it is about finding fun, easy recipes that are also healthy and things that you could do. So our focus for the first show was about healthy eating over the holidays, and we decided to look at just a couple quick recipes for dips so that we could think of, okay, how can you eat more fruits and vegetables, which is really what it's all about when we've got a lot of other options available, too, of course, over the holidays. So
one dip is sweet and one is savory.
Right.
And they're
right.
Very easy.
Yes, they're very easy.
Yeah,
so that's going to be up, I think, it'll be on Tuesday nights at 7, I believe, on the Channel 7. The local channel, and they'll run those cooking shows on Tuesday nights.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's available to cable viewers outside the university campus, but again, as I mentioned, we'll be able to find it online as a Vimeo.
As a Vimeo, yes.
Yeah. And also today what Harriet Williamson, our producer, did is she put a link to it on the Afternoon Magazine website for today's program. So
very
folks
good.
Can check it out.
It's fresh and new today, so yeah. Today's the first day it's up, I think. So.
Yeah, it looks great. You look pretty chef-like, I gotta say.
Well, thank you.
Ready for food.tv,
okay.
Food Network. So when we were talking a little bit earlier in the week, or maybe it was already a week or so ago, we were talking about fruits and vegetables and their role in keeping us healthy. And with all the attention we've had over the last couple of months now, at least, to flu, maybe it would be a good thing to do to talk a little bit about what we might do in our kitchens to help fight off disease and build a strong immune system. So this is also apparently an interesting and growing field in nutrition, nutrition immunology.
Right. I think there's a lot of interest now in particular foods and particular nutrients. We've always heard a lot about functional foods and particular foods that might have additional benefits, and looking at how foods and nutrients do affect the immune system and particularly affect certain cells in the body that have a role in the immune system and keeping us healthy. And we've known for a long time that generally, at least in some studies, people who tend to eat more fruits and vegetables have lower risk of certain diseases, certainly with heart disease and certain cancers and things like that. And part of that, we believe, is related to how food affects the immune system and keeps us healthy over time. So it only makes sense that perhaps eating certain things and staying hydrated, and we know exercise positively affects the immune system in moderate amounts, so all those things would perhaps play roles in keeping us healthy through the winter as we're trying to stay away from disease. Of course, we can't always help doing that, but
sure.
lowering our risk, of course.
What's the role of dehydration in fighting off disease, illness, or recovering?
Well, overall, the body works best when we're hydrated. The body can utilize nutrients better. We stay more regular. Our gastrointestinal systems work better. We know we tend to absorb nutrients better if we're hydrated, if our blood volume is normal, and those kinds of things. So just from a sense of staying more healthy, it's certainly better. We also know that if someone becomes dehydrated, it's sometimes harder for them to get over being sick, or maybe they're sick longer if they're not staying hydrated. So that's why we always say if you're not feeling well, you still at least keep trying to drink so you don't become so overly dehydrated. That is tough on the body. That might be even more important for kids and for older people as they age, because it's easier to become dehydrated as we get older too. And the other thing that's kind of working against us this time of year is the fact that a lot of people don't drink very much in the winter anyway, because we don't really have the same drive to drink. We may not feel as warm. We may not be as outside as much. We just may not drink as much naturally when it's colder, but we still need the fluids. And so we still have to stay hydrated, but we might have to think about it a little bit more to have those fluids around.
Yeah. So if you're thirsty, have some water, some juice, some tea.
Right. It's a good time to have some tea right now and just keeping the fluids available for sure.
What kinds of foods might we consider putting on the table at this time of year to help keep us well?
Well, we definitely look at the foods that tend to have the highest nutrients. And if we look at some of the nutrients, and we can have all kinds of lists of nutrients that might be the most beneficial, but I brought a list here of some certain nutrients. There have been a lot of neat articles published recently about this whole issue, and there was a good article in the Wall Street Journal online not too long ago, and it kind of outlined the different nutrients that may play particular roles in the immune system. And So if I go through those, the first one would be vitamin A that plays a role in immunity in several different ways. Well, we know from studies in the past that taking extra vitamin A or taking large doses of vitamin A is not necessarily helpful and might actually be harmful. So we're not saying to go out and get additional vitamin A supplements or anything like that. But we do know that eating more foods high in vitamin A, and we always think of things like dark green and dark orange foods. So a simple thing like eating more carrots and eating more spinach and eating more peaches, and even canned peaches are really a good source of beta carotene and vitamin A. Or canned apricots might not eat as many fresh peaches in the winter, but certainly the canned varieties are really good options too, are really helpful. So vitamin A is important. Vitamin A is fortified in other things as well. So that may be a key. Vitamin E, which we think of as more of a fat, a vitamin that's also carried in the fat like vitamin A, but things like nuts and seeds and particular oils, let's say like olive oil, contain vitamin E. So that's important because vitamin E is helpful with the immune system in different roles as well. And some other things that are listed, we always think of vitamin C, right?
Right.
Think, of course, getting more vitamin C if you can. And, you know, whether or not taking, you know, 500 milligrams or 1,000 milligrams or even more of vitamin C really is going to, you know, stave off a cold, well, that's quite controversial and doubtful that you're going to, it's going to keep you from getting sick. But on the other hand, there have been a few studies indicating that more vitamin C might help you get over it faster, or just having more vitamin C in your blood at any particular time can be helpful. So, of course, we think of things like citrus, which tend to be in, you know, around oranges and tangerines and all the clementines that are out there right now.
Grapefruit,
exactly. And just a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. If you do eat a lot of different fruits, you're going to get a lot of vitamin C. I mean, there's no question that most foods are typically quite high. Things like even smoothies, which we think of in the summer, but actually they're really helpful now because you could get frozen strawberries and mix them with a little orange juice and maybe a little yogurt, which is, you know, good for the digestive system. And that would make a nice snack that's lower calorie, but you're going to get a lot of vitamin C. So that's helpful. And then we look at some of the B vitamins, particularly vitamin B6. And again, if you're eating a pretty balanced diet, if you're getting fruits and vegetables, if you're getting whole grains, if you're getting some nuts and seeds and beans and things that we are going to recommend in general, then your B vitamins will be pretty high as well. So B6 is a vitamin that sometimes people will take extra of and might be helpful in a little bit of supplementation. But again, you know, we just try to get it in food as much as possible. But that plays a lot of roles. Some other ones, selenium, thiamine's another B vitamin. Iron plays a role in the immune system as well. And again, generally we don't supplement with iron unless somebody's low in iron. Or if you're taking a multivitamin for women before menopause, usually it has iron. Men's vitamins generally don't have iron because generally they don't need it. But trying to get a wide variety of foods and really kind of focusing on the healthy eating pyramid that I brought here from Harvard School of Public Health. We have the Food Guide Pyramid or My Pyramid, which is certainly a wonderful resource. But Harvard School of Public Health has also put out the Healthy Eating Pyramid, they call it, from the Department of Nutrition. And they really focus a lot more on the vegetables and fruits and whole grains and have particular areas for the nuts, seeds, beans, and tofu. So more focus on beans and nuts and seeds, which we know are, again, have a lot of these nutrients. They're going to have selenium and zinc, and we're going to find things like vitamin E and those types of foods. Fish, poultry, and eggs is its own little protein area. So the focus here is not so much on red meat, but a lot more on fish and eggs and chicken. And then really trying to, again, make a real concerted effort to go for the vegetables and fruits and the whole grains. Whole grains, just things like whole wheat bread, brown rice, whole wheat pasta, just have so many more B vitamins as well as other nutrients, generally more iron, more zinc than the refined grains. So even choosing more whole grains, it's helpful to us if we think about it from an immune system standpoint.
Yeah. It's interesting here that Harvard School of Public Health on their healthy eating pyramid at the base, which is the, you know, widest strip along the bottom of the pyramid, is exercise.
And exercise, again, there's no doubt that exercise has an immune-enhancing quality to it. So, you know, every time I work with clients, that's one thing we look at is what's your exercise? Not necessarily everybody can go out and have a hard workout, but we're not really talking about that. We're talking about daily activity. Even if you're watching TV, maybe during the commercials, you do something during the winter. If you're not getting out as much during the commercials, you get up and go up and down some steps, just one up, one down, one up, one down, have some little hand weights by yourself. So you're doing some activity, I think, is really helpful. And then they list here weight control as a big thing. There has been a lot of interest of late. Of course, we know there's a lot of interest just in obesity and the concern that we have, particularly for Americans, of being overweight. And there's some interest in looking at the data, which shows that for some people, being overweight also decreases the immune status for people. So,
right.
So being at a good, healthy weight, and I think it's confusing because we have all these recommendations for weight and body mass index and everything, and I always tell people, well, where do you feel good? I mean, that's one thing. Where do you feel good? Where can you get around real well? You can do some exercise. Your energy's pretty good. So we don't all have to be at the exact, you know, best weight that's recommended for our height, but we should be able to do the things we feel we want to do. And for a lot of people, even losing 5, 10, 15 pounds really helps them as far as daily living and allows us to be more active. And so anything like that is helpful. So I think sometimes it seems daunting when we think that, gosh, we're 50 pounds overweight. Is that really going to help me? But anything you do is going to be helpful if you feel you can be more active.
Yeah. There's a feature in the New York Times they call it the Well blog. And they take a look at different ideas that people have about well-being. And one of them was if you get some exercise during the day, you'll sleep better at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so they investigated that and they said, yep, evidence points to that's probably true. And we also know that in staying well and preventing illness, a good night's sleep is important as well.
Exactly. And I would say I work so much with college students definitely if I even take a look at the students that I either have taught through the years or intern with me or things like that. I mean, if they sleep well, it's so much easier for them to get everything done and be able to manage and not get sick as often. I mean, just anecdotally, you see this. And so making sure that you get enough rest is really important. And that's where I think little things like if you can get an hour extra sleep, do it. If you can drink more fluids, particularly in the morning, do it. Because, again, we wake up so dehydrated that if people don't get on top of that in the first 3 or 4 hours they're awake, they're probably never going to catch up. And then what we know is that day in and day out, if people consistently are not taking in what they need, then they can become very dehydrated and the body just doesn't work very well when that happens. And so those little things like rest and fluids and, of course, stress plays a role in the immune system too. So trying to manage that as best you can is sometimes challenging this time of year, but helpful too.
Well, walking can help there too as
right.
well. So, take a walk and then kick back for a while and
mm-hmm.
try and relax. Tall order at this time of the year, I think, for a lot of folks.
Right.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. And we would love to hear from you this afternoon, listeners, with your questions about diet and nutrition. Give us a call. Join us at 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. 333-WILL and toll free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, another thing here that is with the healthy eating pyramid from Harvard School of Public Health is that a daily multivitamin plus a little extra vitamin D is recommended for most people. And this is something else I wanted to talk with you about because apparently what we know to date is that people drawing their nutrients from food, somehow or other the body recognizes that and handles it better than a lot of supplements. And the other concern with supplements is you don't want to go overboard because they can present problems.
Right, right.
With toxicity.
Right. I mean, there's no question that you want to focus on diet, focus on the foods themselves. And just, again, just the simple thing of eating more fruits and vegetables. One of the studies that came out a few years ago from Harvard did compare people who ate more like 8 fruits and vegetables, servings of fruits and vegetables a day, to those who ate 1 or 2 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And those who ate the higher level, of course, that's a big range, but had about a 30% lower risk of heart disease now over time. I mean, that's significant, and that's the main difference in their diet. And again, it doesn't have to be anything like a huge amount of food, even something like half a banana and a small glass of orange juice and half a grapefruit in the morning, which is probably doable for a lot of people, is 3 servings right there. So it's the idea that you're just focusing more on these healthy foods, and then all of a sudden all these vitamins and minerals come right along with it and all these other antioxidants. And the bottom line with food is that there's the synergy. We call it food synergy or nutrition synergy with all these foods working together and additional nutrients we may not even have discovered yet, but we know that they're actually in the food. So
and that's such a pleasurable activity.
It certainly is a wonderful activity.
So let's take a call now from a listener in Urbana waiting for us on line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes. I was wondering about your guest's opinion of nutritional yeast and brewer's yeast.
Well, nutritional yeast and brewer's yeast can be really helpful in terms of B vitamins in particular, and a lot of people use them to get some additional B vitamins as one of the main things that they do. So that can be very helpful. Again, it's more of a food-based source of nutrients. And we find that a lot of vegetarians may use some additional brewer's yeast or nutritional yeast as well to add that in. And there are some other trace nutrients that are found in there too. So that can be an excellent addition to the diet, I think, can be very helpful. I kind of think of brewer's yeast or nutritional yeast or some of these things kind of along the lines of what are little extras that you can do. Maybe you can add, again, ground flaxseed, which is not something everybody's going to do every day, but it's an extra that would add more omega-3s and add more good fibers. And this brewer's yeast can be something that can just boost the diet even more. Other things you might think of along those lines would be things like spirulina, or utilizing more tea, or using more garlic in the diet, or some of the spices that are helpful as far as the immune system and just overall nutritionally. So if you punch in a lot of these little things that you can do on a daily or near daily basis, then all of a sudden your total intake really goes up of key nutrients. So that can be a great addition.
How much yeast would you include in a diet?
Well, I think it would depend on what somebody's used to using. I mean, you can add that in. A lot of people will use their brewer's yeast and or nutritional yeast and add that into foods, mix it into things like cottage cheese, or even mix it in juices and that kind of thing. And I think a lot of times you'll use maybe a quarter teaspoon or half teaspoon to start out with. It's just a little bit. It's pretty high nutrient food, so it wouldn't have to be a lot. I think like anything, again, if we use ground flax as another example, most people, if they start with a teaspoon a day, that might be enough to get them going and maybe work up to 2 tablespoons. But the brewer's yeast is quite concentrated, so maybe even a half a teaspoon would be a good addition.
And what is the is there any qualitative difference between brewer's yeast and nutritional yeast?
Well, there may be a little difference nutritionally, but I don't know specifically how that would be. I think a lot of people, again, will look for the high amount of B vitamins in both those products. So I think you'd be in good shape by using either one. That might work for you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Where do you find nutritional yeast or brewer's yeast?
Well, generally you find that at natural food stores. Yeah, and you can find that a lot of times they'll be in the bins. You can get it in packages, but a lot of times it'll be in the larger bins that you can get the nutritional yeast or containers. But you won't find it as, I can't say you can't find it in general grocery stores. You may be able to find it there too, but I'm most familiar with it more in the natural food stores.
Yeah. How does it compare to something like wheat germ?
Well, wheat germ, I think you'd have to eat more of it. The brewer's yeast is more concentrated in certain nutrients, but wheat germ, per se, may have more fibers and other things in it, too. So wheat germ would be another one of those things in that category.
Extra.
Right. It's just a little addition that you could take in that would be helpful.
And nutritional yeast and brewer's yeast, how does that differ, or does it differ, from yeast that we use in baking?
It is different. I wish I knew more about the composition of it, but it is different. It's more of a type of product that, again, you can just eat itself and add in. So whereas I don't think of general yeast as something that I would just
no.
eat, but
yeah.
So I need to learn more about that. I'm not sure the complete difference with those, but
yeah.
But we have certainly, if people are trying to boost their diet naturally in ways, again, we think about sometimes with vegetarians trying to get in some additional B's and different things, and that would be a typical thing that we might use and for those types of clients. It's not something I would say everybody needs to do. Again, B vitamins, generally when you're eating whole grains and when you're eating a variety of foods, a lot of B vitamins kind of carry along with those foods anyway. So it's not something that everybody would need to take in additionally in their diet.
Okay, very good. And how do you store it, and what's its shelf life?
Mm-hmm. Well, generally, those types of products are stored either in a container that they come in tightly sealed or usually refrigerated. It's a good way to store that too. Put it in a Ziploc bag or put it in a container and refrigerate it.
Okay, very good. Let's take another couple of calls. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Next, we go to Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about the immune system. I have kind of an overactive immune system, I think is how you would describe it, in that I have some autoimmune disorders. Mm-hmm. And so I always wonder, you know, should I be taking additional things to boost my immune system?
Well, that's a really tricky question. And even in some of the recent articles that I read looking at food and immunity with flu and with colds, there's always this kind of caution or contradiction in saying that, well, we know omega-3s are good for the body, but if your body naturally is trying to fight something or help yourself in a certain way, you don't want to take so many omega-3s that then your body maybe doesn't work properly the way it normally should. And so I think we run into that sometimes with autoimmune diseases too. There's a concern that if you overdo certain nutrients, will that kind of, you know, hamper your body with trying to heal itself the way it needs to do things. So I guess my general recommendation is not to go too high in any one particular nutrient. In other words, maybe if you use omega-3s, and we know that's helpful for decreasing inflammation, a gram of omega-3s is maybe a reasonable amount, but not going real high. And the same thing with vitamin C. A good example, a few years ago, there were some studies that came out looking at distance runners. And the theory with this study was that if distance runners were given additional vitamin E and additional vitamin C, that they would be able to recover faster after a marathon and the body would kind of return back to normal after all of this stress on the body. And actually, they found in some of those cases, the athletes didn't repair as well because the extra nutrients kind of, got in the way of the body's normal repair process. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's sometimes what we see with different immunity-based, concerns and things. So I guess my basic recommendation to you would be that I wouldn't go way overboard on any one particular nutrient, but I'd certainly try to really focus on whole grains and fruits and vegetables and natural sources of vitamin E like nuts and seeds and things like that,
right,
which you may already be doing. But it is, again, kind of controversial in terms of adding a ton of other nutrients. I think we just want to be careful with that because there is usually some reaction that occurs. It's the old idea that if you do too much of one thing, something else might happen in the body that would maybe override it or cause some additional
good
problems.
Question for your doctor, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Next, we take a call from a listener in Chicago on line 4. Hello? Line 4?
Hello. Yes, I was going to ask about something that came up many, many years ago in the diet book, Diets for a Small Planet Earth, in which Ms. Lappe remarks that you should get all the elements in the food together so that you can establish a complete protein, because certain foods are lacking certain amino acids and so forth. So then later on she said research shows that you can take certain foods at one time and then have other foods at a later time during the day. They will still reconstitute a complementary full protein, whereas before it was thought you had to have it all at once at one time. Have you found such a viewpoint to be correct?
Well, the thinking is definitely that to form the proteins in the body, and this would particularly be important for somebody who's not eating animal proteins. So let's say if you're getting your proteins from vegetarian sources where you are a vegan or you're not getting animal foods, because animal foods themselves have all the amino acids necessary at one time, the essential. But now we think that certainly within a 24-hour period, if you're getting a lot of different foods with a lot of different amino acids, the body then can build the proteins it needs. It can repair. It can do what it needs to do with tissue. So we don't recommend that people have to get, let's say, beans and corn at the same meal, although we might naturally eat those foods together anyway. But to get a complete protein, it doesn't have to be at the exact same time.
One more question, please.
Sure.
Regarding this matter of use, it made me think about things that are beneficial and complementary and things that cancel out some of the food elements that we're trying to attain. I'd heard that, conventional baking uses yeast, but then some baking uses bicarbonate. And somewhere along the line, I remember hearing or reading that bicarbonate cancels out some of the B vitamins. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Well, I do think that in
sometimes I feel like it's a roller coaster when you have a baked product with yeast and then you may be having something that's got a bicarbonate of baking soda or whatever, baking soda, mm-hmm. bicarbonate soda, and that sort of is essential for the quality of the cooking, but it's detrimental to B vitamins.
Well, I do think you're right. I mean, I won't, you know, pretend to be a specialist on B vitamins or the biochemistry, but definitely when different foods or nutrients or things come together, sometimes some nutrients are enhanced in terms of their absorption, and sometimes some are the nutrient absorption is decreased. You know, one example we might think is spinach, which, you know, you cook spinach, and if you cook it in olive oil, then you get more absorption of certain nutrients because of that. But also spinach itself, if you're trying to get more iron from spinach, it has other fibers and phytates which decrease the absorption of iron. So, you know, there are always these things happening with different foods. And so I think it's probably very true with what you're talking about. And this brings back the reason why we need to just try to eat a real variety of foods and not get stuck on the same foods every day or the same types of foods or not varying our diet enough, because it may be that we're eating certain things that are high in a nutrient, but perhaps the way we're eating them, we don't get the best benefit from it. But you eat some.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. This is the first Monday of the month, the day we usually talk with Susan about diet and nutrition. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also a consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the ARC. Listeners, my name is Celeste Quinn. I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments for Susan Kundrat. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. And we also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL.
I think the last caller's question brings up another thing to think about, and that is particularly in the winter to not worry so much that you're getting everything fresh, because the other thing we know with nutrients is that certain foods, when they are canned or processed or cooked, some of the nutrients we absorb better than necessarily always having to have everything fresh. So I always have clients tell me that during the winter they just don't eat much produce, and I say, well, gosh, go get canned pineapple and peaches and canned foods and frozen foods and things too, because that's still going to be healthy. And in fact, you may get other nutrients you don't normally get. So that's important for our listeners to understand, is that they don't necessarily have to have everything fresh if they can't get what they need, because certainly, you know, nutrient-wise, you're still going to get some good benefit. One thing I wanted to mention too, when we were thinking about this whole idea of foods that may help with the immune system, and there was an article that I found too on about.com on nutrition, which sometimes they have some good articles on there, looking at eating well to reduce your risk of cold and flu. And one thing they highlight on that article is a website called mealsmatter.org. Some of our listeners may have seen mm-hmm. this website. And on this mealsmatter.org, they actually have a cookbook that was put together that has a cookbook of flu-fighting foods. And they have appetizers and beverages and entrees and different foods. And so that's just mealsmatter.org. And then you could search in there flu-fighting foods cookbook. And I grabbed a couple things that looked interesting to me. One of them was making your own lemonade with ginger. Of course, ginger is certainly a really high nutrient herb to be able to use. And so this is just 10 lemons and 1 1/4 cups of three tablespoons of grated fresh ginger, and then some sugar or sweetener added to that, and as a way to have something different to drink in the winter. And again, mm-hmm. we need to try to make sure we get some more fluids in the winter. So
drop some sliced ginger in your tea.
Exactly.
Another thing, a hot tea with ginger is great.
Oh, yes.
And this, what else you got here?
This was roasted garlic ginger sweet potato soup.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds really good, too. But just thinking about that might be another resource that some of our listeners might want to look for.
Okay. Well, we'll put that on our website. And also on our website this time out, I asked Harriet Williamson to also put this website, a link to this website from the CDC up,
mm-hmm.
and it is www.freedomfromdiet.org. fruits and veggies matter.
Oh, yes.
.gov. Mm-hmm. And then also, for folks who are interested in dietary supplements, the National Institutes of Health has a useful site, www.dietary-supplements.info.nih.gov. And we'll have a link. We have a link already on our website for today's program with Susan, so that you could just go. That's probably the easiest thing to do. Mm-hmm. And also, again, as we mentioned, you can find the Vimeo. I'm not quite sure what a Vimeo is. You know, video,
yeah.
I know YouTube, but a Vimeo. But anyway, Susan and the folks at the ARC are doing a program for the campus cable. It's called I Cook. And the first one is up and on our website, and it's on the cable system in the campus community. But I'm sure if you check out Vimeo's, you'll find it there
right.
as well. Okay, so let's take another call for Susan. Listener on line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I'm mentoring a 13-year-old girl, and I'm appalled at what she eats for lunch, and she's also sick a lot. And I'm wondering if you could give me ideas about things that could be taken in lunches.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say the first thing, if you've got a 13-year-old, finding things that maybe she's used to or things that she certainly likes is helpful. And the first thing I would think of would be some produce. She might be, she might be okay with taking 100% juice, for example, because she may need some, something to drink in there too. So juice boxes, there are a lot of different companies that have 100% juice boxes, or there are a lot of mixed juice and fruit and vegetable juice boxes now that are really nice that she could take. So that would be easy. And I don't know if she likes things like oranges or apples or things like that. But what I suggest in lunch is sometimes students won't eat them if they just have to eat the whole thing. But they're apt to eat them if they've been peeled ahead. Or we mentioned clementines earlier, which are so easy because they peel so fast and easy, which, students might be more apt to eat. It sounds kind of silly, but just the
sure.
idea of having to peel them or having to cut them. I know with my daughter's lunch, I just cut an apple ahead of time and I put a little orange juice on it and I pour it off and then have it in a Ziploc bag. Well, she eats it. She always eats it if it's already cut up, but she didn't like to eat just a whole apple and take that to school.
Good point.
Yeah, so that, that makes it easier too. Even the pop-top fruit cups, the pop-top peaches or fruit cocktail or things like that are easy to take in lunches, and those would be good too. And there are also some products now, the dried chips, the dried vegetable chips. A lot of kids like those. They actually are pretty healthy. They're some of them are a bit fried too, but they're like potato chips, but they're other vegetables. There's carrot chips and there's beet chips and things like that are kind of good and funky and different.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, baby carrots work really well because they're easy and portable. And then maybe she would like things like making her own trail mix, or maybe that'd be something cool to do together where you have some two or three whole grain cereals and some sunflower seeds and some nuts and pretzels and maybe a few M&Ms or something and putting them into little small Ziploc bags. Those work great for lunches. And then, of course, you get more vitamin E and you've got more protein. And there are little packets now, too, that are available that are the single-serving peanut butter packs. And so a lot of kids will maybe take a banana and they'll squeeze peanut butter on the banana and they'll make them eat more fruit. And then, of course, it's a good source of protein with the peanut butter, too.
Excellent.
And raisins, don't forget
sure.
raisins. Dried fruit.
Dried fruit in general is great.
Go in the trail mix as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing furiously.
Good.
That's the key, though, you have to do more than say this is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
It has to taste good, and they have to be say, well, I can do this.
Right.
I like it, yeah.
And it can't be too drastically different. So far,
right.
She eats, chips and candy. It's just too unbelievable. But
well, those things are all easy. I think we also have to think that whatever we encourage people to eat, it has to be as easy as a candy bar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's easy to grab a candy bar, so how can we make... baby carrots are easy to eat if they're in a little bag. You don't have to do is open them, or the apples are already cut, or anything that's fast, because they don't have much time either, as you know.
Right.
So that's part of it.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's take another call, a listener on a cell phone, line two. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have a question. I'm diabetic, And I also wonder, you talk about having a half a banana, orange juice, and these kind of things, tropical stuff. What did people actually eat way back when all these things weren't readily available in winter and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, good question. I think people ate, you know, what was around, and probably in the winter there wasn't a lot of fruit, that's for sure. I mean, there may have been
apples and melons left over from summer.
Right, and some that were dried. I think there were perhaps more dried fruits that were kept, but right, there weren't a lot of things available. And I think, for example, we get a lot of vitamin C from things like oranges and orange juice and those kinds of things. But probably the vitamin C came from whatever potatoes were in the...
Root vegetables.
Yeah, root vegetables, and getting enough potatoes so you'd get the vitamin C. And there may not have been a lot of other places where people got that.
A lot of people are allergic to dairy stuff, cow milk and things like that, because that wasn't part of the original
right
diet. And... Mm. I'm a Native American person, so I just thought, what would I eat? I mean, I have avoided sweet things like that because they're actually sugar, no matter how healthy they are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering about how people actually survived and thrived, or if they did thrive, way back when it wasn't all this convenient stuff. Are there any books that are available on things like that?
I'm sure.
I'm sure there are. It would be a... Now it makes me kind of think that'd be a good read over the winter break too, but
maybe,
I'm sure there are.
Maybe we can take that up next time.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Well, I like preserves and those kind of things, but I was just wondering, they get all the dickens cooked out of them and they're put it full of sugar.
Yeah.
So it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just thought I'd introduce that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
It's a very good question.
How did our ancestors eat? You know, we put that spread out on the Thanksgiving table, and I bet you maybe some of that was back in the 16th, 17th century, but...
Not a lot of it, probably,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. And I do think that that's where, boy, you just had to be able to... Hopefully you had a good garden, and you could put up a lot of food, and...
Dry fish, no doubt. And
right.
You'd fish until... If you were on water, you fish until... You couldn't, and then I guess you could cut a hole in the ice and
mm-hmm.
fish. But root vegetables, I'm sure people had root cellars, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And would put up whatever they could during the warm months of mm-hmm. the year. So, but
yeah, and I think a lot of foods back then were also, you know, they were preserved by drying or salting or things like that, too. And but, yeah, it does make you wonder, too, how many people may have had other diseases or problems from, you know, not getting enough of vitamin C or other nutrients, and maybe they got it enough during the year, but I'm sure there was a lot of problems there too.
Well, our lifespan certainly is a lot longer,
right?
Isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. So our food supply has done us well there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess now our biggest problem is we go overboard. So we go for the convenience, and some things that are convenient are not very healthy for us. I think one of the things that I read somewhere in terms of staying healthy during cold and flu season was to avoid processed foods or cut back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is on the UI7 cable show on campus, you did something. We got one more caller here we're going to get to. But you said something that I thought was interesting, that if you're going to combine flavors and into dips. We mentioned that you've got a spinach dip and you've got a cannoli cream
mm-hmm.
on the program to dip fruits in the cannoli cream and veggies in the spinach dip. But you used low-fat and no-fat products because you said you're adding other things into the mix. So when we're doing that, those products are probably more palatable.
Right. That's the whole idea, is that you might be able, let's say in a dip with spinach, where you have spinach and water chestnuts and maybe some other spices that you add in there, that if you use a non-fat sour
cream,
you put
garlic in that, so you're mm-hmm. you're boosting up the flavor while keeping the fat
right
at a minimum. Okay,
yeah.
Our last caller this afternoon, line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Well, I figured that back then, during that time and things, people was putting up a lot of stuff in root cellars. You can also store apples in the ground for a certain length of time, you know, put straw down in there,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a lot of people put up a lot of fruits and things that they got during the summertime and store them in, you know, in cool places and things,
mm-hmm.
Places where they would be safe at. And usually the sugar that they use and things, I don't know what they use for sugar, but they did use something to sweeten stuff. Usually the sweet stuff don't spoil real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was growing up, you might see a little mold on top of something like that, but you just pull it off and you eat it. You eat the rest of the food. It didn't bother us, you know?
Right.
Not at all. So, I mean, that was ways, you know, and things, you know, and they killed animals and they had smokehouses and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in Mississippi, so I know some of the things that they did.
Yeah.
You know, because even when I grew up in things, we had to buy ice off the ice truck, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's probably talking about before I was born, and I'm 72. So.
Well, I think, you know, this is.
They had ways to survive.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I think a lot of us have forgotten it or never knew how to do it in the first place. And I think it would behoove us to revisit that and take a look at how it was done and how people survived and
mm-hmm.
thank them, our hats off to them, because we wouldn't be here
right
without them. So,
and I think you bring up a good point too, that it's really, I think there's more of an interest now in getting back to that and
mm-hmm.
preserving food and utilizing the fresh food from summer, and Illinois Extension
Urban
does a
gardens.
Lot of work in that. Yes, and that is an area that we could all probably learn more about.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll look into that in the near future, if not next month, maybe
okay.
later on in the winter.
Sure.
Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Susan Kundrot is with Nutrition on the Move. She's also here at the University of Illinois. You'll find her online at www.nutritiononthemove.net. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. And do visit us if you have access to visit us on today's option on the afternoon magazine at will.illinois.edu. We've got some links up there for you.